following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance. You should experience lots of explosions with no body parts. Parents should be ready to cover their ears.
Since March 2007, one online audio production group has pushed the boundaries.
Broken Sea Audio Productions presents Maudlin.
It's Sounding Board. Audio drama with Lumpy Bits.
You have been listening to Jake Sanson.
Broken Sea Audio Productions presents
My Name is Feedback, and these are my stories.
Last time on Gaia's Voyages.
This is the Broken Sea Audio production of Escape from New York.
OTR Swagcast.
Doctor Who, starring Mark Kalita as the Doctor.
BrokenSea.com. New audio every Thursday.
This is one of the few dark places on Earth. Its location is a rumor whispered in the hushed corridors of the White Hall. Even today, it's simply referred to as the Village.
Did you know that Number 6 was not accounted for? I believe Number 6 is still on the island. Rather a good way to protect him and his information, I suppose. No one's been near the place for over 3 decades.
The bad news is, she hit that hurricane. Ran aground. Serious damage. Radio's out and all systems are down. She's marooned in the village.
Last night, you called me Number 6. You put me in a house addressed Number 6. You never even asked me my name.
No need for names here. Number 6.
Number 6? Indeed! Why, Number 6, you're not the man you used to be.
Civilization has branded you. You'll never be free unless you view everyone and everything as suspect.
She's a valuable resource. She has access to sensitive material.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Ross. She's as loyal as you or I.
We can't rule out defection or foul play.
I'm talking about trust.
Sometimes, Thomas, you're shockingly naive.
What is this place?
A village. Like any number of villages.
And you?
A citizen.
Like any number?
I am not a number.
I love this game. I love this game.
Power has returned to the village.
Power? Who are you?
A trusted servant of the state.
Damn it, Tommy. Texas would say y'all are all hat and no cap. Y'all got so distracted by the surface that you couldn't see beneath. You gotta brush away all that Rocco crap and expose the truth. It was all in the files. You just had to read between the lines.
I'm afraid this place isn't big enough for both of us. Good to see you again, Number 6. What a pleasant coincidence bumping into you after... How long has it been?
I've stumbled across a private war, and I'm sick of those. I won't be part of it.
No love without freedom. No freedom without love. Simple truths worth dying for.
The Prisoner, Broken Sea Productions.
And now, it's time for the Broken Sea Audio Production, OTR Swag Cast.
Welcome back to the Swagcast. Tonight we have 2 episodes of the CBS Radio Mystery Theater, along with
Bury Your Dead in Arizona, as well as more of the Avengers. Hope you enjoy. And here's some information about the CBS Radio Mystery Theater, which was sometimes abbreviated as CBS RMT, which was an ambitious and sustained attempt during the 70s to revive the great drama of old-time radio. The series was created by Hyman Brown, a radio legend due to his work on Inner Sanctum Mysteries and other shows dating back to the 30s. On CBS affiliates, the series began its long run on January 6, 1974 until December 31, 1982. A total of 1,399 original episodes. The total number of broadcasts, including reruns, was 2,969. The format was similar to that of classic old-time radio shows such as The Mysterious Traveler and The Whistler, in that a host, E.G. Marshall, introduces each episode and provides some pithy wisdom throughout, but unlike the host's earlier programs, Marshall is fully mortal, merely someone whose heightened insight plunged the listener into the world of the macabre. The show began with the ominous sound of a creaking crypt door slowly opening to invite listeners in for the evening's adventure. Accompanied by Marshall's disturbing utterance, "Come in. Welcome. I am E.G. Marshall." At the end of each show, the door would swing shut, followed by Marshall's classic sign-off, "Until next time, pleasant dreams," segueing into the show's haunting woodwind theme music. Marshall hosted the program every year, but the final one when actress Tammy Grimes took over maintaining the format. Prominent actors from radio and screen performed on the series, from Fred Gwynne, Mercedes McCambridge, Norman Rose, Tony Roberts, Howard DeSilva, Celeste Holm, Morgan Fairchild, Larry Haynes, Paul Hecht, Kim Hunter of Planet of the Apes fame, Dira anyone, Mason Adams, a young John Lithgow, and many others. In 1975, CBS RMT won the prestigious Peabody Award, and in 1990 was inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame. And now, I'm going to turn it over to E.G. Marshall.
A CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... E.G. Marshall. Some men dream of exploring outer space, of conquering the furthest reaches of the universe. But there are others who are still intrigued by the mysteries contained right here on Earth, or in the Earth. Our planet is nearly 8,000 miles in diameter, yet man's deepest explorations have taken him down only 4 miles. Suppose we use an egg to represent the Earth. That 4 miles represents a depth no thicker than the egg's shell. Yet, how much lies buried there?
No, I don't want to see it.
But you must see it.
No, please.
It has fallen to you to defend its secret.
But why me?
Fate, my friend. I could not know it would be you.
No.
You have no choice. Your curiosity is my ally.
Good Lord. I've never seen anything like this in my entire life.
Our mystery drama, The Secret of the Aztecs, was written especially for Mystery Theater by Percy Grainger and stars Mason Adams.
It is sponsored in part by True Value Hardware Stores and Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
The lure of hidden treasure has always had an irresistible and sometimes fatal fascination for mankind. Prospectors died under a burning sun seeking the legendary city of El Dorado. Others have frozen to death trying to follow the northern lights, which they believed were the reflection of vast radium beds in the Arctic. And of course, we all think that if only we could discover the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, our troubles would be over. But would they? We're on the edge of a desert in the southwest.
Howdy, mister. Feel all right?
Yes, please, regular. How far is it to the next town?
40 miles. But you ain't planning to drive across the desert tonight, are you?
I have to. Got some important film I've got to mail back to the university to be developed.
Are you a scientist?
I'm a geologist. See, I've been photographing the seashells at the top of those mountains back there.
Seashells at the top of a mountain?
Yeah, we've known for a long time this area was once underwater. But these pictures will prove that the ocean was far deeper than we expected.
Well, now, ain't that something? Are you sure you want to drive through the desert tonight? It's almost dark.
I don't have time to waste. These photographs are important.
I'm telling you, it ain't safe.
Oh? What do you mean?
Oh, nothing. Better let me check under your hood.
There is no need. My oil's fine.
No, I better do it.
Well, all right. Strange fellow. Hey, what are you doing? My engine's fine.
I'm just tightening one of your plugs. That's $4.50 for the gas.
Yeah. There you go.
Sure wish you'd reconsider.
Thanks for the concern, but I'll be okay.
People are all so superstitious. It's almost as if he were trying to frighten me. I wonder what he was so worried about.
Now for the news. Local authorities confess they are stumped by the mysterious disappearances of four people reported missing over a period of several weeks in the desert west of San Miguel.
Desert? Hey, that's here.
The four seem to have had nothing in common, nor can any motive be found to explain why they have vanished. Sheriff Wesley Parman is with us tonight in our studio.
I'm sorry to say we have no leads at this time, but the desert's a deep place, and we're continuing the investigation.
Sheriff Parman, you think it could be murder?
I would not want to make that assumption until we find the bodies. It is possible they just lost their way.
But isn't it strange that all four disappeared in the same place on Highway 17?
It could be just a coincidence.
Thank you, Sheriff. Motorists are advised not to drive after sundown, as all the disappearances have occurred at night.
Highway 17. That's what I'm on. So that's what that gas station fellow was trying to warn me about. But why didn't he just come right out and say it? Well, I'm not going to let it scare me. What? What's happening? I mean, why is my car stopping? Oh, boy, now I have it affixed. Middle of nowhere. A car in sight. Well, I'd better start walking. Someone's bound to come along. Just my luck. My car breaks down right where four people... No. I better not think about that. Headlights. Hey, where did they come from? I looked back not 10 seconds ago. There was no one in this road for miles.
Is that your car back up the road?
Yeah, it is.
I suppose you'd like a ride.
I think I can walk, thanks.
It's still 25 miles to the next town.
Wow. Maybe I am being silly. Thank you. My name is, Jim. Jim Hudson.
Quetzal.
That's an odd name.
Not odd. It's Aztec.
Aztec. I thought they were extinct. Well, I'm a geologist. I've just made a new discovery. I was taking some pictures of seashells.
On Mount Chiricahua.
You know about them?
I know everything about this desert. Everything. Your discovery is not new.
I think it's pretty important. This film, it's not valuable, not in money terms. My camera is just an old...
Why are you shaking? You cold?
No. Well, I tell you, was that report on the radio about the missing people? Did you hear it?
You can't get reception out here.
What? But I was just listening to it.
You seem pretty nervous.
Well, I'm sorry. I appreciate you driving me into town.
Who said I was going to town?
You're not?
Why should I go to town? I live out here.
But where? The map doesn't show any side road.
You can spend the night with me.
Oh, no, no. I'm in a terrible hurry. Wait a minute. What are you doing? How can you turn off the highway? There's no road.
You just hang on, fella.
Where are we?
This is where I live.
That shack? Well, it looks deserted. Really, I wish you'd show me how to get back to the road.
I light the lamp. What do you think of Quetzal's cabin, eh?
Well, everything is so antique. This calendar says 1912.
Tonight, you help me keep watch.
Keep watch?
Tonight, Quetzal will be attacked.
Attacked? By who?
You mentioned four people who disappeared.
Yeah, vanished into thin air.
They did not just vanish. Nobody just vanished. That's superstition. They were murdered.
Murdered? By?
By the savage.
Savage?
I call him Mizcortl. After the Aztec god of the hunt, Mizcortl means cloud serpent.
Cloud serpent? But there is no such thing.
You will recognize him when you see him. He always carries arrows of lightning.
But I don't understand. What is this savage hunting that he's killed four people?
Come. I will show you. Watch your footing.
It must be 1,000 feet down. Are we going out on that ledge?
No, no. Not the ledge. It would give way. We must continue straight up.
Where are you taking me?
You will see.
No. No, I don't want to go any further. Whatever it is, I don't want to see it.
You have no choice. Either way, the savage will assume you have seen what he is after. Here, in this cave, is what we have come to see.
Good Lord! I don't believe my eyes.
Believe, my friend?
Why, this treasure, the entire cave is filled. Chest after chest. Plates, jewelry, statues.
What? This is the finest piece of all.
Crown, a headdress. Solid gold.
With the tails of 500 birds of paradise.
Why, it's just like the headdress they say Montezuma wore.
It is his headdress.
What?
What you are looking at, my friend, is the treasure of Montezuma.
People have searched for this for centuries. But the Aztec Empire was 1,500 miles to the south. How did it get all the way up here?
The fatal mistake of the greedy has always been to underestimate the stamina of the Aztec. They assume we must have hidden the treasure near Mexico City the night the Spaniards marched into the citadel. But our remnant carried it to the north, to this spot. They intend to use it one day to rebuild the great Aztec Empire. But shortly after, they were ambushed and wiped out by the Apache.
Well, then how did you find it?
One woman survived the massacre. She bore a son and passed the secret on for him. He told his son, and so it has come down, this most sacred trust. For it was understood that the only way to assure that the treasure would never be found was if there was always one person who knew its location. But I have no heirs.
So now it's up to me.
Yes. As it was up to the four before you.
But they're dead.
They were not clever enough. Let us hope you will be. Come. We must go back to my cabin and wait for the savage. I will give you this gun.
But it's only an old flintlock.
It will serve.
Does this savage know where the treasure is?
No. But in his never-ending search, he is coming too close. That is why it has been necessary for me to bring you here.
Why don't you stop him yourself?
That is not possible.
I don't understand.
You will.
But if he's killed four people, why don't you go to the police?
The savage, like the Indian, has learned the art of concealment. Even the police could not stop him. One more thing I must tell you.
Let me by, or we'll find out whether this old rifle works or not.
You must remember the way to the treasure, so it will be safe forever. The others were murdered because they did not...
You get out of my way or I'll shoot.
Roy!
It did work, this old flintlock. Oh, no. Quetzal! Old man! Oh, no. He's dead. The road! At last, the road! Help! Help me! Stop!
Say, fella, you okay?
Please help me.
You ought to be out here, not on this road. Ain't you hurt?
I know. Just give me a lift into town.
Sounds like you've been running quite a ways. What happened?
Oh, I don't know. Just take me to the sheriff's office.
Wesley Parman? Sure. But why?
Because I've just killed a man.
What?
I just killed an old man back there. What are you doing? Well, why are you pointing that gun at me?
You think I drive this road without protection? Get out. And don't try anything funny.
Well, no, you can't do that.
There's a killer loose out here, mister. I ain't taking any chances.
Yeah, but I didn't kill those other people. I think the man that I shot did.
Get out.
I didn't mean to shoot him. I thought the gun was just an antique. When Quetzal gave it to me, it looked like an old flintlock.
Quetzal? Did you say Quetzal?
Yes.
Mister, you must be crazy.
What?
He didn't commit those murders.
Why not?
Because old man Quetzal's been dead for 65 years.
Has our friend been in another world, on an astral plane? If so, he's going to have plenty of problems now that he's back to Earth. And if not, well, there's always the savage, who could be a man or, perhaps even more terrifying, a state of mind. I'll return shortly with Act Two. Strange things happen in the desert. The children of Israel survived there for many years on nothing but lichen. The desert sunflower, with its hauntingly beautiful bloom, flourishes on the side of an enormous dune where no water has ever fallen. And how many people, lost for days and half crazed from thirst, have seen shimmering images of things that were not there at all.
That old man can't have been dead 65 years. I tell you, I saw him.
And I'm telling you, it's impossible.
My car broke down and he picked me up in an old truck like a Model T or something. He took me to his cabin. And I tell you, I killed him.
Mister, I don't think it's the sheriff you want to see.
What? Where are you taking me?
I tell you, Doc, I had a heck of a time getting him here.
I had the nurse give him a sedative.
I've seen the desert do a lot of strange things to people, but this guy's really off.
Well, I want to have a talk with him. Maybe I can ascertain what he's suffering from. I think you'd better come in, too. You might be able to help.
Sure, Doc.
Mr. Hudson? Mr. Hudson?
Yes?
My name is Dr. Hinckley.
Where am I?
You're in the hospital in San Miguel.
Oh, my film, I've got to send it in.
Mr. Parks, do you know what he's talking about?
No, he didn't have nothing with him when I picked him up. Parker,
This man, he pulled a gun on me. He was going to shoot me.
Is that true, Mr. Parks?
No, of course not. I don't even own a gun.
Well, I tell you, I saw it.
Mr. Parks, I think you'd better leave us alone.
Okay.
I am not sick. I'm a geologist. I'm with the university.
Maybe you'd better ring up Sheriff Palmer and ask him to come over here.
Sure thing, Doctor.
There. He's gone. Is that better?
Where's my film? I had some very important photographs.
You just lie back and relax, Mr. Hudson.
I saw that old man as plain as I see you.
Now, we all know about Quetzal here. He was a strange man, a hermit. But I don't think even he had the power to return from the grave.
Now I know what he meant when he said his secret would be safe. It's so fantastic no one would listen to me.
What secret is that, Mr. Hudson?
Oh, if I told you, then you'd really think I was nuts.
I think we'd better keep you here a while for observation.
You mean I'm a prisoner?
You're an intelligent man, Mr. Hudson. I'm sure you can appreciate that from our point of view, your tale is, well, to say the least, fantastic.
I am not staying here.
Hello, Doc. Charlie Parks gave me a call. I came right over.
Hello, Sheriff.
What's up?
Well, this fellow here's got a pretty weird story. Mr. Parks found him wandering in the desert.
Is that the sheriff?
That's right, fella. Wesley Parman's the name.
Sheriff, this man is holding me here against my will. And that other guy brought me here at gunpoint and refuses to admit it. Is this whole town crazy?
According to Charlie, you were going on about old man Quetzal. You claim you shot him. Is that right, Mr.,
The name on the driver's license is in his pocket, says Hudson.
That is my name.
Well, did you shoot him?
Wes, I don't think it's a good idea to humor him.
I know, Doc, but I'm staring down the barrel of four unsolved murders, and at this point I'm prepared to follow up any lead I got.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Are you accusing me of murdering those other people?
I'm not accusing you of anything. Don't get excited. Let's first of all try to clear up the mystery of this man you claim you shot.
You think it may have been someone simply claiming to be Quetzal?
That's the obvious explanation. Here, Mr. Hudson, take a look at this old photograph. Is that the man you say you shot?
Yeah. Is that him?
That is Quetzal, all right.
Mr. Hudson, why don't you tell me exactly what happened?
I shot him from point-blank range, but it was self-defense.
You're saying you were attacked by a ghost?
Well, no, not exactly. Come to think of it, it was almost as if he wanted me to shoot him.
I see. You think you could remember the spot where all this happened?
No, I don't want to go back there.
Son, whatever has happened, I know you've had a rough night, but I think you better consider your situation.
Wes, the patient is under sedation. I can't permit you to interrogate him.
The only way we're going to get to the bottom of this is if we try to retrace your steps.
Well, I'm afraid I can't allow you to take him out of the hospital in his condition.
Well, all right, all right. Look, Doc, I'm a big boy. I'll take full responsibility. You're sure this is the spot?
Well, I think so. It's hard to tell. Everything looks the same on here, especially in the dark.
Well, I don't see no body.
It has to be here somewhere.
I don't know. Maybe we better just go back to the hospital.
No, Sheriff, please. Hey, wait a second. What's this?
Well, it looks like a camera case.
Yes, it is. It's my camera case. So I was here.
Well, how do you know it's yours?
Open it up. There should be a 35-millimeter camera with a macro-focus lens and 8 rolls of undeveloped film.
That's what's in here,
you
all
see?
Right.
You see, I must have dropped it along with the gun right after I shot Quetzal.
I don't see no gun, and I certainly don't see nobody.
But I felt the weight of the gun in my hands. My shoulder's still sore from the kick.
What's the matter?
A savage.
What?
The savage. Quetzal told me about this man or creature or whatever that he called the savage. He said he'd be coming tonight. He must have taken the body.
Now, what would he want with the body of a man who's been dead 65 years?
I'm telling the truth. I know. A cabin. If we could only find Quetzal's cabin.
That's easy. Everybody knows where the remains of Quetzal's cabin are.
Not remains. It's as neat as a pin. Everything was in its place.
All right, let's get back in the Jeep. I bet you better hang on. We're in for a bumpy ride.
I know that, Sheriff. I've already been there once.
Look familiar?
I don't believe it. Why, it's a shambles. Litter, beer cans.
Well, local high school kids use this place for parties for years. I'm always running them out.
But there was furniture, there was curtains, a calendar. There it is. I can even tell you the year without looking. 1912.
Laura? That was the year old man Quetzal died.
But there must be a rational explanation. The savage, he must have come up here and wrecked everything. Quetzal said he was going to attack tonight.
Now, this savage of yours is a mighty convenient fellow, Mr. Hudson. But how does that account for the dust?
What dust?
Run your finger along that sill.
What? That's a quarter of an inch thick.
Yes, Mr. Hudson. Because nobody's lived here for 65 years.
But...
Now, just calm down. Who is this savage, anyway?
Quetzal called him Miss Cotel, the Aztec god of the hunt. He said I'd recognize him, that he was a cloud serpent with lightning arrows.
Uh-huh.
Quetzal told me that he was after the...
The what?
The treasure.
What treasure?
Montezuma's gold.
Montezuma's gold, huh?
I could have sworn that I saw it with my own eyes. I ran my fingers through coffers of gold coins. I saw the headdress of Montezuma himself.
He showed you all this, did he?
Yes. No. I don't know. I don't know anything anymore. Ah, the doctor's right, Sheriff. I must be crazy.
And just where was this fabulous treasure?
I can't remember. Everything looks the same out here. You know, I think we'd better go back to the hospital.
Mr. Hudson. You seem like a nice fella. You're an overeducated guy whose imagination has got the better of him. But I'm willing to go one more round with you. If you think you could find your way back to this treasure...
I just want to get out of here.
Now, look. Part of your story makes sense.
It does?
Old man Quetzal was injured. And I remember my grandfather saying there's some rumor that he knew the location of a treasure.
Well, then I really might have seen it. But how does that explain my meeting this ghost?
Well, there's more things on heaven and earth than we dream of, as the poet said. I know cops now who are using psychics for detective work, for Pete's sake. Seems anything's possible these days.
I know, and that's why I want to get away from here. Quetzal said that savage was going to come here tonight.
Now, we're back on that again, are we? Now, look. If I take you back to town, I'll have to return you to the hospital.
Well, maybe that's where I should be.
And with all due respect to the good doctor, he's a strict man. You could be there a long time as long as you stick to this crazy story. Unless you can show me some proof.
You're threatening me, Sheriff. You're trying to keep me here.
I am trying to give you the benefit of the doubt.
You think I killed those four people, don't you? You want to pin their murders on me? Well, why not? I'm a stranger. I've been out in the desert for 3 weeks. I've got no alibi. And four unsolved disappearances makes you look bad. You're trying to keep me here until I confess.
Now, son, that just doesn't make sense.
Why not? Makes perfect sense to me. I think you're trying to drive me crazy, and I want to know why.
I'm operating on only one assumption, Mr. Hudson, that somehow there's a connection between what you've gone through tonight and those disappearances. And if you can remember where you went, it just might lead us to those other four people. Now, can you see that?
I'm sorry, but I guess I just don't know what to think anymore. Yeah, I'll try to remember.
Good.
Oh, my nerves. Have you got a cigarette?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sure, here. Ah, could you light it for me? My hands are trembling.
Okay. Hey, what's the matter?
Your arm.
What?
That tattoo on your arm. It's the Cloud Serpent with the lightning arrows.
You're very observant, Mr. Hudson.
You're Miss Codal. You're the savage.
That's right, Mr. Hudson. I'm the savage. And by the time you finish that cigarette, you better remember just where the treasure of the Aztecs is hidden.
Mysterious forces operate in the universe. But is not the most mysterious of all a terrifyingly simple one? That any person, any one of us, minding his own business, meaning no harm to no one, can at any moment be arbitrarily caught up in a web of danger and intrigue and find himself a helpless pawn in a game, the losing of which may cost him his life. I'll be back shortly with our final act. We all believe in free will, don't we? But for our friend Mr. Hudson, it's been in rather short supply. In fact, his last act of free will was his decision to drive off into the desert at sunset. And it now appears he may not drive out of it alive.
It was you all along that Quetzal was trying to warn me against.
That's right, Mr. Hudson.
That's why he couldn't go to the police. That's what he meant when he said the savage had mastered the art of concealment.
He said that, did he? Coming from him, I consider that a mighty high compliment.
Now I remember where I've seen you before. At that service station. You were the attendant. You insisted on checking under my hood. You fixed this so that my car would break down.
Your deduction is correct.
But then who are you? The sheriff or the station attendant?
Let's just say that when you're up against a ghost, you have to become something of a spirit yourself.
Then Quetzal really was a ghost?
Well, like I said before, there's more to heaven and earth than we know. Montezuma's treasure has been guarded by spiritual forces for 4.5 centuries. My great-grandfather searched for it over 100 years ago. He died under circumstances that were most mysterious. So did my grandfather and my father. But I have no intention of failing as they did.
That it was you who killed those other people.
Yeah, I thought I'd lost the trail till one day 3 weeks ago, a tourist showed up in my office with a story of a strange encounter with an old man who met Quetzal's description. It was then I realized I must be closer than I knew. So close the spirit of the last Aztec descendant had had to materialize to try to trick me to my death. Unfortunately, that tourist couldn't remember where the treasure was, but you can see why I had to kill him. Wouldn't be right for every two-bit treasure hunter in the country to converge on what is mine.
Yours?
Mine. My family has paid for it in blood. I started arranging for people to break down out here to provide more encounters with Quetzal. He's been most obliging. But unfortunately, there's a lot of truth in the old saying that a person can't cut the same path through the desert twice. Now, I hope for both our sakes that you'll have better luck remembering the way.
But I tell you, I don't. You've got to believe me.
If I do, Mr. Hudson, you're a dead man.
You wouldn't dare kill me. There are 2 witnesses back in town who know I'm with you. The doctor and that guy Charlie who picked me up.
Well, now, Mr. Hudson, I've got some good news and some bad news.
What do you mean?
The good news is you're right. There are 2 witnesses. The bad news is you're wrong. They aren't in town.
What?
Bob. Charlie.
Hello, Mr. Hudson.
What? Doctor. Charlie.
Unfortunately, Wes here had to let us in on his little secret.
I'm sure there's enough gold that it'll just naturally divide into 3 even piles when Mr. Hudson here leads us to it.
Is he having any better luck than his predecessors, remembering where old Quetzal's goose took him?
Well, I think we're about to find out. 2 of that cigarette, Mr. Hudson?
I tell you, I don't remember. We climbed for a long time. I wasn't paying any attention.
Ah,
He's going to be just like all the rest.
I don't think so. This time, I've come prepared.
What's that?
Truth serum. His subconscious mind will remember the course they took.
You can't do this. That treasure belongs to the Aztec.
All right, grab him, Charlie.
Hold him down.
Okay.
How long does it take to work?
Just a few minutes. And when he comes to, we should have a very honest man on our hands.
When's he going to come to? You sure you didn't give him too much of that stuff?
Just be patient, Wes.
Oh, that's easy for you to say. 3 weeks ago, you didn't know this treasure existed. But I've been searching for it my whole life. And now, thanks to Doc's truth serum, I don't see as I have any more use for you two.
Hey, Wes, what are you doing with that gun?
You're next, Doc.
I kind of figured you'd try a stunt like this, Wes. There's just one thing. That shot I gave Mr. Hudson, it contained a small dose of a compound I added to the sodium pentothal.
What's that?
It's poison. It won't kill him right away. And I did take the precaution of bringing along the antidote.
Give me your bag.
Yeah.
Hey. There must be 20 vials in here.
That's right. And I'm the only one who knows which is the antidote. I'd say we still have a partnership, wouldn't you, Wes?
Why, you...
Where am I?
Mr. Hudson?
Yes, my name is Mr. Hudson.
Good. Do you remember the trail you took with Quetzal?
Yes.
Do you remember what it led to?
It led to the treasure of Montezuma.
I want you to take us there, Mr. Hudson. Okay, Mr. Hudson. Which way do we go from here?
I'm not sure. There's something. My head.
You must remember the way so the treasure will be safe forever.
Do we keep going straight up or take that ledge?
I don't know.
Not the ledge. The ledge will give way. Remember!
Of course, that's what he meant.
What?
The ledge! Take the ledge!
Okay, but you first.
Me? No, I can't. I'm too dizzy.
Don't give me that. Get going.
Wes, don't push him, remember?
The treasure is buried in a cave right at the other end of that ledge.
Montezuma's treasure at last after 100 years.
Wes, be careful! Good Lord, it's 1,000 feet down!
That was very clever, Mr. Hudson.
I think I'm going to be sick.
Now, you listen to me.
No.
I'll make you a deal.
No, I just want to get away from here.
Mr. Hudson, wait.
Don't you understand? That treasure belongs to the Aztecs. There's a curse on it. Leave it alone.
Leave it alone. Leave it alone.
Mr. Hudson. Mr. Hudson.
I've got to get you. He needs the antidote.
Road and Charlie's car. Please start. Please. Bring left. There are the lights of the town. What's that? Someone's following me. Oh, I've got to make it to town. I've got to get hold of someone. Tell someone where I am. I think I've lost him. Now, there's a phone booth. Oh, just my luck. I won't have a dime. Wait a minute. Oh, there. It's good.
Operator, give me 555-4037, please.
What is it?
Oh, no.
Mister?
Hey, mister. The sheriff! How can you still be alive? I saw you fall.
Calm down. You're okay now. I saw you jumping Charlie's car back there. I've been following you.
What? I don't understand.
My name's Chester Parliament. I'm the sheriff's brother.
His brother?
Yeah, his twin brother.
Wait a minute. You're the service station attendant.
Yeah, that's right. Thank goodness I found you. You're still alive.
But your brother's dead.
I can't say I'm sorry. The lure of that crazy fantasy had him turned into a madman.
It's not a fantasy. There really is a treasure.
I don't want to hear about it. Those mountains can keep it for all I care. West talked me into helping him at first. When he started killing people, I tried to pull out, but then he threatened me, his own brother. I wanted to warn you, but I was scared. Then I just couldn't let this go on any longer, so I come out here looking for you. Now, come on, I'll drive you back to your car and get it running. I figure that's the least I can do for you, huh?
Just a minute. Charlie kept a gun in his car. I want to get it.
What for?
One of them is still alive, the doctor. I'm not taking any more chances.
Well, there we go. Your car ought to run okay now.
Thanks, Chester.
I ought to put a stop to this a long time ago. Well, I guess you'll be glad to get away from here, huh?
Yeah, I guess I will.
You got that film you were so concerned about?
Oh, no, still up in Quetzal's cabin.
Now, if I was you, I'd forget it. Especially with that Dr. Hinckley still running around loose somewhere.
Yeah, just forget it.
You, really saw Quetzal, huh?
Yeah.
And he showed you the treasure?
Yeah. No. I never saw it.
Oh. Well, I suppose it's just as well.
Yeah.
Say, you sure you're all right?
Well, I feel kind of sick. I'll be okay when I'm on the open road. Thanks, Chester.
All right. Well, good luck.
Sick. Must be that truth serum. Now what? A film. Maybe I ought to go get it. I'd come right back. Oh, no. It's the doctor. Just stay away.
Mr. Hudson! Mr. Hudson, wait!
Hold it right there!
Listen, you've got to listen to me.
Don't you come any closer.
Don't shoot! You don't know. I'm willing to make a deal.
Why should I make a deal with you?
That truth serum. I
don't need you, Doc. I don't need anyone. I'm the one who knows where the treasure is.
A spirit like Quetzal really exist? Why not? There are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in our philosophies. And the treasure of Montezuma never has been found, has it? Human knowledge has doubled in the last 50 years and will double again in the next 20. Yet along the way, there is much we have forgotten we might well have done to remember. Are the great pre-Columbian civilizations off Central America really dead? Could the people who built the vast pyramids of the Yucatan disappear without a trace? Perhaps, for no civilization can live forever, even ours. But something of a culture can survive, even if it is only the mysterious power to keep its secrets safe from the prying eyes of modern man. Our cast included Mason Adams, Bob Dryden, Ken Harvey, and Court Benson. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Mutual Broadcasting System presents I Love the Mystery. A new Carlton Morse adventure thriller.
Yeah. Man, there ain't a door in this boarding house that don't creak and groan. Make a darn good burglar alarm, Mo.
What are you doing? Come on into my room.
I'm coming. Doggone it. This ain't like living in a barn.
Yeah, it's a bit of a clatter, all right, when you walk about.
Where have you been?
I'm across the hall talking to Nash and the maestro. Fit to be tied, the maestro. He says we had better accommodations in the boxcar.
Did you ever eat such vile food?
Probably the reason we get it for 50 cents a day. Hey, who's that?
It's Dry Gulch Mary. Who'd you think it was?
Good evening, Mary.
Is that so? Who said the food I serve up is vile?
I'm afraid I did.
Well, if you don't like it, you can get out.
But how did you know I said it?
I was listening. That's how I know.
Hey, you admit you was listening at the keyhole?
I was. And the next crack about the food I serve, you can all get out the whole kit and caboodle.
We're extremely sorry.
You'd better be.
No, just a minute, Mary. Are you always going to be listening at outdoors?
When I'm a mind to.
But isn't that considered bad taste?
I got a right to know what's going on in my boarding house, and I'm standing on my right.
Well, you just go right ahead and eavesdrop your heart's content.
And mind what you say about my cooking.
We'll be careful.
See that you do.
Well, I know what I'm going to do.
What's that?
Well, I'm going to bed in the dark tonight. With a peeping Tom for a landlady, I ain't going to take no chances.
All right, remember after this. If you've got anything important to say, say it in a low voice.
Well, I got something important to say.
What's that?
Jack, that there Nasher gal in the maestro is up to something.
What makes you think so?
I know it. You remember what Nasher said this morning about the wolves descending on Bury Your Dead tonight?
Rubbish.
Well, maybe so, but I'm telling you, something mighty funny is happening across the hall in their room.
Well, what?
Well, for one thing, you know them tights like acrobats wear? Like long underwear on his skin tight?
Yeah.
Well, Nasher's got a pair of them on. Black ones. And, feller, is she a looker in them?
Nasher's wearing a pair of black tight
pants? I swear to my grandma, she is.
Well, what for? What's the object?
Well, I asked her, and I asked the maestro.
Yeah?
And every last word that they'd say was, tonight the wolf howls.
Tonight the wolf howls?
That's all. And when I come out of their room, you know what was happening? Nasher was a-laying curled up at the maestro's feet like a dog. And he is a petting and a smoothing her hair.
But, Doc, that's just what happened in the boxcar.
You're telling me. What made my hair stand up on end? Just standing there watching them. Why, they didn't pay no more attention to me than if I wasn't there.
Why'd you leave?
You think I wanted to stand there and see Nasher turned into a wolf right in front of my eyes?
Doc.
Well, dadgummit, that's what happened in the boxcar.
You don't know that it did. You didn't see it happen.
Yes, but, Jack, we saw her eyes, green and yellow. Only an animal's eyes shine like that in the dark.
And nothing but an animal could have made them snarling noisy.
So you think the maestro's in there turning Nasher into an animal?
Well, doggone it, Jack. I know it don't make sense, just as well as you do. But something's happening in there. Something that made me want to get out of there just as fast as I could. Hey!
Oh, you're back again, Mary.
Yes, I'm back.
Well, what is it this time?
Talk louder. I can't hear a word you say.
That's just the point. We don't want you to hear.
So that's it. You're plotting.
Plotting?
That's what I said. The more I see of you three, the more sure I am that you're the ones that killed Alky Joe last night.
Mary, for the 10th time, we did not kill Alky Joe.
Maybe.
But doggone it, Mary, why pick on us? Everybody else in town swears up and down that Alky Joe was killed by wolves.
Wolves?
Well, I saw his body this afternoon. It certainly didn't look like the work of a man to me.
That'd be a good way to commit a murder, wouldn't it? Make it look like an animal done it?
Well, you're certainly the only one in town who believes that.
That's because I'm smart.
Look, Mary, will you go away and leave us alone?
What's that? You ordering me out of my own boarding house?
We paid for these rooms. For the time being, they're ours.
Well, if you don't like
it...
I know. You know what?
If we don't like the way you run this boarding house, get out.
And take it or leave it.
Well, what else can we do for you?
Talk louder.
Man, what a woman.
Say, isn't there some way we could put a lock on our doors?
Well, where would you get a lock? No stores. Besides, as long as she makes a point of letting us know she's listening, what harm can it be?
Well, what about Nash and the maestro? Don't you think you ought to go over there and have a look, Jack?
No, let them alone. As long as they stay in their rooms, they can't do any harm.
That's right. And if they open their door or walk in the hall, we can hear them.
But if they go out, will we follow them? Is that it?
Well, we'll see. By the way, Doc, what happened about that old desert rat jumping Dick?
What do you mean, what happened?
Well, this morning he was going up to his house and get his daughter for you to look over.
Oh, yeah.
Well, did you see that?
Are you going to marry her?
No, she wouldn't leave the house.
The way Dick talked, I thought he intended to drag her down here by the hair if necessary.
I don't know. He just come back and said if I wanted to look her over before I married her, I'd have to come up to his shack.
Well, did you go?
No, I told him I wouldn't walk across the street to look at a female.
Oh.
Said if he wanted me to see her, he'd have to lasso her and bring her down here to the boarding house. Hey, you think the old coot's serious, Jack?
Well, he seemed awfully anxious for you to see her.
Yeah. Well, he come back this afternoon and said he'd catch her when she was asleep and hog-tie her and towed her down here.
Well, I've always heard the desert breeds some weird and wonderful specimens.
We're getting our share of this trip. Jumping Dick, Dry Gulch Man.
I say. Company.
Hey, don't tell me Mary's getting some manners.
Come in.
Oh, I say.
Oh, hello, Nasher.
See, Maestro, wish to speak with you.
Fine. Tell him to come on in.
No. You must come to him.
Well, to the heck with him.
Very well, and we'll go to him.
Hey, Jack, you gonna let that big tub of goose grease order us around?
You do not say that about the maestro.
Oh, I see you still got them black tights on.
Why not?
Where did you get them?
I always have them with me. They are my dancing tights.
Why are you wearing them tonight?
That is what the maestro wished to talk with you about. Will you come?
All right. Come on, Reg, Doc.
Right in here. The maestro is waiting. Maestro, they are here.
Close the door.
Yes, maestro.
Now, drat his forsaken hole. Door squeak, shutters rattle, boards creak. Musty, filthy.
Hey, maestro, you better not let Dry Gulch Mary hear you.
I told that woman I'd turn her into a mangy coyote if she didn't keep away from this room.
You told her that?
I certainly did.
She believed you?
With good reason. I wouldn't hesitate one moment.
Now, look here. You're carrying this mysticism to a point where it's ridiculous. You can't turn anyone into an animal, and you know that just as well as I do.
So, you want to defy me?
I don't know what your game is, but whatever it is, you're overplaying your hand.
You still think I didn't turn Nasha into an animal in the boxcar?
I know you did. Some clever trick, yeah. Nasha's a woman. She's never been anything else.
With your own ears, you heard a man scream in that boxcar. With your own hands, you felt a knife stuck in his heart there in the dark.
It was a dead man, all right. What's more, I think you killed him.
But when you turned on your flashlight, he was not there.
Another of your tricks.
Mysticism.
I say trick, and I mean trick.
It was a trick, too, when I sent Nasha floating out of the moving boxcar and then made her return.
It was.
So, I have not yet convinced you I am a great mystic. That I have powers beyond the normal.
You have not.
Then I will prove it tonight.
Just as you like.
I will prove it beyond any reasonable doubt.
Is that why you've called us in here?
No. No, I called you here to warn you that you must not leave this boarding house tonight.
You're telling us what to do?
I'm warning you.
Why?
Why am I warning you?
Well, that isn't what I mean, but why are you warning us?
Because you gave Nasha and me financial assistance.
Yes, I paid your room and board here.
And that is my way of showing my gratitude.
By warning us not to leave the house tonight?
Yes.
I don't follow you.
Tonight, the wolf pack returns to this village.
That's what Nasha said this morning. How do you know they're coming?
Because I shall bring them.
Just how do you intend to do this?
First, I will put Nasha to sleep. Nasha.
Yes, maestro.
Curl up at my feet.
Yes, maestro.
Yes. Now, close your eyes. You are thinking only what I am thinking.
Yes. Yes.
You are sleeping.
I am sleeping.
Sleep, Nasha.
Ooh.
Sleep.
She's sure enough asleep, Doc?
Beyond awakening until I give the word.
You think she is, Jack?
Yes, that's simple hypnosis. Well, she's asleep. Now how are you going to bring the wolves?
I will turn Nasha into a wolf.
You mean that?
I will turn Nasha into a wolf. I will send her out to the pack. She will bring them here.
You mind if I yawn?
I will turn Nasha into a wolf.
Well, don't stand there saying it. Go ahead and do it.
Turn out the lamp.
No. Do it here in the light where we can see it.
Metamorphosis must take place in the dark. Now turn out the light.
Shall I, Jack?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, Jack. Here goes the light. There.
Man, is it dark in here.
Well, the light's up. Do something.
Ah, sure. I am smoothing your hair. It is the hair of a woman, but it is changing. It is changing to the hair of a wolf. The mane of a wolf. You are going to be a wolf. When I say the word, you are going to be a wolf.
Masha, you are a wolf! Those eyes, they're shining in the dark.
Go, Nasha. Go join the pack.
Jack, she went right out through the window.
The wolf pack will visit, bury your dead tonight.
Further transcribed adventures of Jack, Doc, and Reggie will come to you tomorrow at this same hour. I Love a Mystery, written and directed by Carlton E. Morse, comes to you Monday through Friday, featuring Russell Thorson as Jack, Jim Bowles as Doc Long, and Tony Randall as Reggie York. Frank McCarthy speaking.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... In. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Welcome to the world of eerie imagination, the fear you can hear. Vendetta. The very word itself invokes dread and strikes a mood of brooding terror. But to live on the island of Corsica, home of the vendetta, is to be steeped in the tradition of violent massacres and the fatalistic expectation of ferocious vengeance as a way of life. At least it would have been so just 100 years ago when these famous words were first written.
It was a hand. A man's hand. Not a skeleton hand, all bright and clean, but a hand black and desiccated, with the yellow nails, the naked muscles, and traces of blood upon the bones at the point where they had been severed as with the blow of an axe about the middle of the forearm. The fingers, extraordinarily long, were attached to enormous tendons, still held in their places here and there by strips of skin. That hand was something hideous. It made one think involuntarily of savage vengeance. And in spite of the putrescent look of death and dissolution, it seemed to have a life of its own.
Our mystery drama, The Hand, was especially adapted from the Guy de Maupassant classic for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin and stars Alexander Scourby. At the time of the bizarre and terrifying affair of the hand, Henri Donnet was a police magistrate in Ajaccio, a charming little white city nestled on the edge of a beautiful gulf, shut in by lofty mountains. Most of the cases he had to investigate or prosecute there were cases of vendetta, but these were Corsican against Corsican. This affair of the hand was alien against what? Something far more alien, perhaps supernatural. That was not until later, of course. For now, the only alien presence was a neighbor of Henri's, a Sir John Rowell, lately come to the island to settle down, and an object of great speculation among the native population.
Well, there goes my new neighbor again.
Does he go hunting at twilight?
No, Bernard. At least there's a magistrate. I hope not.
Well, what's he shooting at, then?
I don't know, Marguerite. We have no sharks. The wolves and other predators stay in the mountains, and he's not been here long enough to start a vendetta.
Oh, I am not sure. Listen to that.
Oh, no call for alarm, Doctor. I'm quite sure your services will not be needed. It is the same pattern, night and morning.
Well, Henri, then what is he shooting at?
A target, I suppose. He's keeping his eye sharp.
But for what?
Ah, now, that is the question.
Have you seen him? He is immense and very powerful.
And he doesn't encourage visitors. He has two huge Alsatian hounds that look ready for the kill at a word.
You are chief magistrate and in a far better position to judge him than any, Henri. What do you make of him?
I don't know. His papers are in order. I have no reason to have any professional interest in him.
Well, has he no one to share his loneliness?
He has a manservant he brought with him from Marseille.
No one else?
There was a woman listed on the ship's manifest as his wife.
Oh, his wife. Well, I never knew. Well, then, but no one seems to know that.
In the months he's been here, no one has seen hide nor hair of her. I've watched these evenings myself, and I've never seen her move from the house. If, indeed, she is inside it. So you see, Marguerite, very soon, both as friend and policeman, I'm going to have to satisfy your curiosity and my own about the mysterious Sir John Rowell. For a while, however, I had to content myself with having a close watch set over the man. None of my people could find anything suspicious enough in his actions for us to make any move. But as the strange rumors about him continued and increased, I resolved to see the stranger face to face for myself. I made a point of going hunting every day in the neighborhood of his place. It took me a little while, but at last, one day... So, bien, Fernand, hold the point. You flushed him. Ah! Got him right under the Englishman's nose. Go fetch him, Fernand. Fernand, hold. Hold then.
Whiskey! Down, boy, down.
That's it. Good dog. Hold.
Here, whiskey, here. My apologies, sir. You're a bird, I believe.
No, no, not at all. I shot him right from under you. Sorry, I didn't know you were there.
Nor I you. Allow me. I'm John Rowell.
Yes, I know, Sir John. I am your neighbor up there on the hill, Henri Donnet.
Pleasure. Damn fine shot.
Sir John, will you accept the game as an apology for shooting over your field?
That's very generous. I'll accept on one condition.
What's that, Sir John?
That you let me return the compliment and ask you to join me in a glass of ale.
Well, good. I will be only too glad to accept. It was less the heat of the day than my professional interest that prompted me to accept the invitation from the tall man with the red hair and beard. Very tall indeed. And also very broad, a sort of placid and polite Hercules. I was most anxious to be able to question him about his life and his projects.
Joseph, out here on the veranda. Change your mind and have something stronger?
Oh, no, 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 no. Ale will be perfect.
Are you called, Sir John?
Yes, two glasses of ale for Monsieur Donnet and myself.
Very well, sir.
And bring a cut of Stilton and some water biscuits. You like our English cheeses?
Oh, yes, I do. We are quite insular enough here on Corsica. It's a rare pleasure to indulge in a foreign taste.
I know what you mean. Still, I can't feel that Corsica, or for that matter, anything French is any way foreign to me. Ah, Joseph, splendid. Thank you. Put the tray on the table here.
Yes, sir.
You can loose the dogs again. We'll be quite safe while I'm with Monsieur Donnet.
Very well, sir.
Oh, those are the big Alsatians I see occasionally, eh?
Two of them.
Yes, yes. They look quite savage and fierce. Do you think perhaps my dog will...
Oh, have no fear. Castor and Pollux are as docile as kittens where other animals are concerned. They're trained as man-killers. Huh? And then... Only at my command. Your health, Monsieur Donnet.
To yours. Delicious. So refreshing.
As the view of the sun setting across that blue Mediterranean water.
Yes, yes. Does Madame Rowell also share your enthusiasm for your adopted island?
Lady Rowell is an invalid. I hope to nurse her back to health here.
Oh, if I could suggest the offices of my good friend, Dr. Forestier.
If a doctor should be needed.
Oh, forgive me, I had no desire
to
pry.
There's nothing to pry into. Natural curiosity.
I must admit, I do find it hard to cast you in the category of a recluse.
Oh, yes. I've traveled a great deal. Africa, India, even America. And as for adventures, yes, I've had plenty of adventures. Oh, yes.
Big game hunting, huh?
What? Oh, of course. I've hunted them all. Tiger, elephant, rhinoceros, gorilla. The names are legion.
Oh, all very dangerous animals. Terribly so.
Not really. When you compare them to the worst of all.
Oh, what?
What else, Monsieur Donnet? In your profession, you must know him too. Man. Oh. Man himself.
Wait! Sir Jordan, come quickly!
What on earth?
Forgive
me.
No.
I followed Sir John down the front steps of the veranda as he took them two at a time and disappeared around the corner of the house. I would have followed him further, except as chance had it, I turned my ankle quite severely on a loose stone after the bottom step. Stopping in momentary pain, the yelp and snarl of the dog suddenly quieted, and I was conscious of the squeak of the front door of the house. Arrested, I looked up to see, framed in the doorway, a tall, emaciated woman with great bruised half circles underlining her eyes that stared with a feverish gleam. She wore a long, loose, trailing peignoir, and with one hand, she beckoned towards me while clutching something in the other close beneath her breast. Painfully, I limped back up the steps.
Help me, whoever you are. Help me.
Lady Rowell.
Whoever I am, this side of the grave, help me.
But how?
By sending this letter. Post haste. Oh, but please, please, I beg of you on all our lives. Don't tell Sir John.
Well, I'm afraid, madame,
oh, please, don't refuse me. You are my last best hope.
Hope for what?
I did not stay in case he returns. But please, I beg of you, send my letter.
She was gone, like a wraith, as though she'd never been. But the letter in my hand was real enough. Before I had time to read the person to whom it was addressed, I found myself involuntarily concealing it in my pocket before Sir John, returning, could see it. Nor could I stop to ponder why my impulse had been to accept the lady's part rather than that of my charming and seemingly outgoing host. Why I chose to conceal its existence rather than reveal it.
My dear Monsieur Donnet, pray forgive me. I'm most sorry we had to be interrupted.
Oh, forgive me for not following you, but I turned my ankle. What happened?
The curse of trying to maintain privacy. The curiosity seeker. A farmer from back in the hills named Deschamps, who passes by here on his daily route, for some unearthly reason came skulking round the back of the house and was cornered by the dogs.
But what would he have expected to find here?
Heaven knows. I've no secrets worth anyone's concern but my own, as I hope you believe. Or is your presence here today more than just a seeming accident? Are you concealing something from me, sir?
For the first time, I was aware that he wore about his loins an American-style gun belt, and that low on each hip, concealed by the flare of his coattails, were two matched pistols with mother-of-pearl handles, on one of which his right hand rested lightly. The letter in my pocket seemed to burn through the lining as I tried to judge whether it caressed that handle by accident or design.
These were only the hands of Sir John, neither of which is the one in the title of our story. To meet that special hand, you must return with me shortly for Act Two. The The huge, red-haired and bearded Englishman towers over the small, dapper Frenchman. They are as widely disparate men as you can imagine. One all muscle and vital force, the other elastic, supple, poised always for the counterstroke, like a rapier. Antagonists? No, only in a sense. But whatever their relationship, mutually admiring of each other.
Why should you imagine I have anything to conceal?
Why, indeed. Come, let's go inside. I'll show you some of the trophies of a roving life, if you'd be interested.
But very, of course.
Can you stand on your ankle all right? Is it sprained?
No, just a slight twist. From the hall, he led me into his parlor, which ran the length and breadth of the whole house across the back in a great L. His parlor was all hung in black silk, embroidered in gold.
The fabric is Japanese work.
Yes, but the rest is yours.
Not the panels. What's mounted on them?
Yes, tiger, lion, black panther. Those I recognize. And elephant tusks, I see.
The hippo and he and the rhino are a little large for mounting.
The rhinoceros is the most dangerous of all, I suppose.
Except, as I told you before.
Now, you're not honestly going to tell a policeman that you're a manhunter.
Not within the confines of civilization, I hope. But I've done a good deal of manhunting, too, in my time.
As a soldier?
That's a profession, not a sport. I've saved a mount in the center for the ultimate trophy. But never had, shall we say, the courage to make the necessary bag to mount it.
I was following the direction of his gaze to a gapingly empty panel in this bizarre and gory collection from the hunt. A panel conspicuous from all the others, since it was lined in red velvet, as if in expectance of framing the pièce de résistance. What would you hope to put there?
Once, I would have been tempted. Now, nothing. I keep it there to remind me that it could be my own head that poetic justice could have easily decided to frame. Oh, Gad, it's suddenly getting dark.
Yes, and I must be off for home. I mustn't hold up your dinner.
I've enjoyed our meeting thoroughly. Please, come again. You're always welcome.
Well, I'm not quite so sure of your Alsatians.
Oh, you need have no worry. From now on, they'll treat you as a friend, as I hope I can.
As I want to be. We shook hands, mine disappearing inside his huge one, my conscience stinging at me as I fought a battle between Donnet the man and Donnet the policeman. Climbing the hill back to my villa with Fernand frisking along beside me, I tried to tell myself I was only being practical, that I was giving myself time to make my decision. A decision that was tipped by the testimony I received from Michel Deschamps as I questioned him at the barracks the following morning. Michel, why did you go so near to his house?
Well, everybody is curious about him and...
Everybody doesn't go near enough to have two dogs attack him.
Well, everybody does not have a milk goat which takes him twice a day by the Englishman's house to see her.
To see her?
Well, it is at dawn, you know. Just before the sun comes up in the half-light, and I am passing by in my cart. Naturally, I'm looking at the house when I pass.
Naturally, I would myself.
So, you see, at that hour, nobody is stirring. Even the dogs are not yet awake. And then I see by the upstairs window a woman. The first few days, I'm not sure. I cost myself she's not some witch or somebody who wants to steal my soul.
Why would she be a witch?
Because, at any rate, in that light, she looks so. I was afraid to answer.
To answer what?
Her signal to come near to her. She kept beckoning as if there was something she must ask me to do. Finally, yesterday morning, I could stand it no longer. I had to go see what she wanted to ask. Was that so wrong?
No, of course not, Michel. I would have done the same. But the dogs stopped you, eh?
Yes. In a way, I'm sorry.
Don't feel that you let her down. But from now on, mind your own business.
Oh, I accept your instruction. I will follow what you advocate.
What I advocate, by all means. Not what I do.
I don't understand you.
Sometimes, even a magistrate has to admit, I do not understand myself. But that is not for you to worry about. That very morning, there was a mail packet sailing. And I sent off the letter, quickly, almost surreptitiously, without looking at the address, except for the fact that it was to the United States of America. And I forgot it, I imagined. And the months went by.
Oh, I do think it's very tedious of you, Henri.
Madame Forestier.
Oh, well, either for reasons of your own, you are protecting our most famous visitor from the rest of us, or, well, he has some hold over you to protect his precious privacy.
He has no hold over me. Oh. Quite the contrary. But if he wishes to be private, I would be the first to protect his right.
Well, on a small island like this, why should he have it any more than the rest of us?
Touché. But if he can, why shouldn't he?
Oh, Henri, you know I don't know how to answer that. All I want to know is, do I have any hope that they might attend my garden fete next month?
They?
Well, there is a Madame Roel.
Yes, but she is... sickly.
Ah, well, is there some hope that at least Sir John might be coaxed to appear?
I have no reason to suppose that he would refuse. Now, Lady Rowell, I would find it hard to answer for.
Well, then, all I want for you is to issue the invitation. Please, may I count on you for that?
Marguerite. We're all old friends. Need you ask? I had my doubts about Sir John, and more particularly his lady, attending any local garden fete. But I could scarcely, in my wildest imaginings, have foreseen how extravagantly and tragically it would be impossible. As I approached the house in the hollow below me, I was in a first-class mood, because in addition to a packet from the mail ship for my host, I also bought a bottle of sherry to share with him that, in my opinion, was one of a kind. He met me at the veranda.
Well, this is an unexpected pleasure.
We had a mail ship in today. I brought you a parcel.
Me?
Yes.
And I thought I'd outstrip the mail. Vain hope. A parcel, you say?
This.
What on earth? It might be a gun from its shape, but it scarcely weighs enough. Shall we go in the parlor while I open my surprise parcel?
As we moved into that parlor, I was super conscious of my host's reaction to the parcel he bore in his hands. Although there was no superscription from the sender, I had an infallible feeling that he sensed exactly where it had come from. That somehow I was accidentally part of a climax in the life of this strange and vital man.
We've talked about my trophies, Monsieur Donnet.
Yes.
The ones I've mounted, the others too clumsy and large to render that way.
Yes.
And the third, and different class, so far I've had no right nor courage to mount.
What are you saying, Sir John?
There is no reason for my receiving this parcel that I can conceive, except one. That I've found no refuge here. I've been betrayed. Only my wife could have done that. And who else is there to have aided her determination to destroy me?
You're asking me?
Yes. You're the only link we have to the world beyond this house.
Sir John, I... Believe me, I had no wish to betray you.
I'm sure of that.
The day we met, your wife, while you were calming the dogs, your wife asked me to send a letter for her.
To Richard Royal?
Well, I must admit I did not read the address. I did notice that it was to the United States of America. I meant no harm.
He meant no harm. Like
Pandora, who naively opened a chest to loose pestilence and all the evils of the world to plague mankind, he meant no harm.
It seemed a simple and reasonable request.
So you acceded. No doubt she also asked you to conceal the fact of the letter from me.
Yes, I am afraid she did.
Were you sorry for her ravaged looks, her haunted eyes? Did you picture me as some monstrous jailer, condemning her to a life of solitary confinement?
Sir John, I can only defend my action by telling you that at the time she did engage my sympathy.
I told you, I believe, that my wife was not in the best of health.
Yes, but...
The fault, perhaps, was all mine. I should have told you that she is insane.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
A little late for that. The damage is done. You may have sealed her death warrant. Perhaps even mine.
Good God, what do you mean?
This parcel from America. Would you like to see what evil out of hell you're acceding to that simple and reasonable request has set loose?
Sir John,
You have involved yourself in this on a personal level. Now I want to involve you on a professional one. As police magistrate, I want you as witness when I open this gift from America. The outer wrapping. Now what do you see?
A box.
And within it?
Something wrapped in canvas.
You wrinkle your nose against the smell?
Yes, it's very strong.
And very familiar?
Yes, formaldehyde.
Which is used to preserve flesh from mortifying. There's a drawstring on the canvas, which I'm opening. And I'm about to show you my present from the other side of the world.
You sound as if you know what it is.
I only wish to God I thought I didn't.
I echoed the same wish. But it didn't change the contents. It was a hand. A man's hand. Not a skeleton hand all bright and clean, but a hand black and desiccated, with traces of blood upon the bones at the point where they had been severed as with the blow of an axe about the middle of the forearm. The fingers, extraordinarily long, were attached to enormous tendons still held in their places by strips of skin. Flayed as it was, that hand was something hideous. It made one think involuntarily of savage vengeance. And in spite of the putrescent look of death and dissolution it had, it seemed to have a life of its own.
So now we see the embodiment of the title of our story. A poor choice of words, since nothing can be more disembodied than a severed hand. Whose hand? And why? And are these nerveless fingers really capable of writing a death warrant? I'll return shortly with Act 3. In sick horror, his stomach churning with revulsion, Monsieur Denet looks at the loathsome object spilled on the desk between him and Sir John. In macabre fascination, his eyes seem riveted to the severed hand. It is only by a supreme effort of will that he is at last able to drag them away and up to Sir John's grim and haunted face.
What is it?
The hand of a thief.
But why? Why is it sent to you?
So that there'll be no mistake in my mind who sends it.
You said before, Richard Rowell, a relation?
My twin brother, younger by less than an hour. As the firstborn, I acceded to the title. The barony was mine, and the living that went with it. Richard had nothing, except my bounty. Our whole life was a gigantic struggle for supremacy. He, because I denied it him, I... because I had to hold it.
If you had everything and he had nothing, what chance did he stand against you?
Well, I'm English, and I believe in fair play. I couldn't share the title, but I made sure the living was shared equally. I'm not ill-favored,
and I'm exceptionally powerful and large. But Richard was taller by 2 inches, stronger by far, and a wild and darkly handsome man that stirred women to a passion beyond their senses. Until Claire.
Madame Rowell?
My wife, yes. Whatever her true name should be now. When we were married, my brother Richard emigrated to the States.
And you have never seen him since?
Oh, yes, I have seen him. I'd hoped for the last time. Will you forgive me now? There's been too much talk, and I must find a place to hang my latest trophy.
To hang it? You can't...
I think I've had quite enough interference from you in my affairs, Monsieur Donnet. I must ask you to leave my house. You're no longer welcome.
It seemed a long journey up the hill that night, but I did not climb it alone. On the way back to my house, I was haunted by 100 thoughts. Had I done wrong to send the letter? Whose was the severed hand? What was the mystery of Sir John's retirement? And what motivated the vendetta of his brother against him? Old jealousies? Or was it all as simple as chercher la femme? Certainly, she would not be hard to find. It must be the Lady Rowell, if a woman was at the heart of it all. Only one thing I could be sure of now, that I should not be seeing him again. But I was badly mistaken about that. Well, Joseph, what brings you here?
Begging your honour's pardon, but Sir John asks if it would be convenient for you to wait on him this evening.
Of course, when?
If it would suit your honour, now would be fine.
It suits me.
After my churlishness on your last visit, I'm more than touched that you do me this honour, Monsieur Denis.
Since I'm still concerned that I may have done you more harm than honor, I couldn't have hesitated.
I've some papers here on my desk that I wish to leave in your charge, after asking you and Joseph to witness them.
What kind of papers, Sir John?
My last will and testament, some property assignments, the legal debris that follows sudden death. Joseph?
Yes, Sir John.
Will you sign here and here?
Yes, sir.
Is there all this immediacy, sir?
In the midst of life, are we not all equally in the midst of death? Thank you, Joseph. You may go.
Yes, Sir John.
Now, you, Monsieur Donnet?
If you want me to. But I see no reason why. Whatever polite disclaimer was on my lips, it was frozen at that moment, as my eyes fell on a blood-chilling sight. A black object in the midst of the empty panel lined with red velvet. Empty no longer. It was the hand, mounted now as the chief of all trophies. But different from all the others in one respect. They were mounted. This was imprisoned. Round the wrist, an enormous chain of iron had been riven about the foul relic, and this chain fastened the hand to the wall by a great ring, solid enough to hold an elephant in leash. Good God!
Ah, yes, the hand. Well, better than my own head, if I can keep it. Will you sign?
Yes, of course. What is it, that hand?
That was part of my best enemy. It was cut off with a saber. Good thing for me, I can tell you.
It's huge. Enormously powerful. The man must have been very strong.
And so far, I've proved stronger. I put the chain on the hand to hold it.
The chain is no use now. The hand can't get away.
The chain is necessary. This hand always tries to get away.
That night, I had a hideous nightmare. I dreamt I saw the hand, the horrible hand, running, like a scorpion or a spider along the curtains and up and down the walls of my room. 3 times I woke up, 3 times I went to sleep again. 3 times I saw the ghastly thing running all over my room and using its fingers like so many legs. The next morning, I was awakened by the news that Sir John Rowell had been murdered during the night. For God's sake, Bernard, act like a doctor instead of some frightened schoolgirl.
No, you have not seen him yet, old friend.
Well, is it the first corpse either of us has had the misfortune to look at?
The first like this.
Oh, how did he die?
The cause of death was strangling, but under what shocking conditions. I tell you, Henri, in 30 years as a physician, I have never seen anything like him.
In what way?
We found him lying on his back in the middle of the room. His coat was torn, one shirt sleeve half pulled off was hanging down. There was every indication that a fearsome struggle had taken place. His face was black and swollen, frightfully distorted. But the most noticeable and terrifying thing was his expression.
His expression?
Absolute, hideous fear. And small wonder, for in the welter of blood that was coagulated about his throat, 5 separate wounds pierced through it as though driven by points of iron.
Only 5?
It was as if he had been strangled by a skeleton who... But that is odd.
What?
What you just said.
Hmm?
Only 5. Well, of course, how stupid of me. There was only evidence of one hand having done the strangling. That makes it even more bizarre.
Is there anything even faintly normal about this whole affair? Now, Joseph, you heard no unusual noise during the night.
Oh, no, Monsieur the Magistrate.
You sleep where?
Well, here in that little room off the kitchen there.
And there was no sound from the dogs all night long?
Oh, no, sir.
Yet if a stranger had approached the house...
Oh, those dogs would have torn him apart if he was a stranger.
But they were quiet. You would have heard them if they had not been, huh?
Well, I'm a very light sleeper.
Yeah. Did you sleep late this morning?
No. I'm awake before cock's crow, you see. So many things to be done. Water to be drawn, the fire to be laid.
Yes. And that's what you were busy with when Lady Rowell left the house?
I was already preparing breakfast for Sir John and a tray to bring up to... You see, that's why I was so surprised when she walked into the kitchen fully dressed.
And what did you say to that?
Well, it's not my place to ask. I just said, what do you want?
And?
Well, she said she didn't want anything. Just that she was feeling better. And if Sir John should ask about her, she was off for a little walk along the beach.
Oh, that didn't strike you as peculiar?
Oh, it most certainly did.
And did she go towards the beach?
Well, I would have thought so. I didn't actually check on it. Why?
You're not aware that she's disappeared?
Oh, no, sir.
We'll leave that for a moment. All right, then what did you do then?
Well, once I had everything simmering like for breakfast, I went up to Sir John's room to assist him in his toilet.
You were in this habit?
Every morning, regular as clockwork.
Continue.
Well, he wasn't there, sir. His bed hadn't been slept in. Turned down just the way I left it the night before. So I became alarmed. Everything was out of sorts, you see.
I see. And then you came downstairs and found him.
That's right. Oh, covered with blood from head to foot. It just don't signify.
What does that mean?
Well, you knew, Sir John, sir, if ever there was a man built and ready to take care of himself, it was he. Why, he never slept without having loaded pistols or revolvers within arm's reach. And he knew how to use them.
Yes, yes. Have you any idea who killed him?
Oh, no, sir.
Could it have been Lady Rowell?
Not a chance, sir.
I met her once. She was a tall woman.
Oh, but wasted away, Your Honor, and weak as a kitten.
Then who?
I don't know, sir. I don't even want to know.
Neither did I, or at least to check on what was in my mind. But I had a duty to my position, and I must admit a morbid drive to support my supposition. He was lying just as he is now on this carpet here?
That's right, sir.
His feet pointed in the same direction?
Toward the door.
And his head?
As it is, sir. Towards the panel directly ahead of you.
I felt a creeping sensation that lifted the hackles on my neck. I knew, before I looked, what I was going to see. The sight that I had fought against making a reality. At last, involuntarily, I lifted my eyes to the wall, to the panel where the horrible flayed hand used to be. It was no longer there. The chain, broken, was dangling from the ring. But even that horror was to be succeeded by another. As I bent again over the dead man, between his clenched teeth, I found one of the fingers of the vanished hand, severed or rather sawed off by the teeth about the middle of the second joint.
Henri, forgive us for violating the sacred precincts of your police office, but the axle of my carriage is broken and we are here to beg you to carry us home.
If you are ready to go.
I am always at your service. And tonight, since it grows dark early these evenings, I will welcome company.
But surely you're not still brooding over Sir John and his vanished lady?
The missing Lady Rowell I can accept. Our gulf is beautiful, but the tides are treacherous, and her hold on life at best was tenuous. Perhaps she wanted to end it. The mystery of Sir John is something else again.
Something best forgotten, I think.
Yes. But it doesn't seem to want to be. Let me show you. Marguerite, forgive me. If you feel faint, close your eyes. Yeah. Bernard, you remember you said he might have been strangled by a skeleton?
Yes.
Yeah. Might he have been strangled by this?
Good Lord. So that is the famous hand, huh? Yes, yes, if it were possible, such a hand could have made the wounds on its throat, but... Where did you find this?
It was discovered last night in the cemetery on the tomb of Sir John Rawl. And mark one thing well.
What?
The index finger is missing. The one we found in the corpse's mouth.
The hand of a thief, Sir John Rawl said. His brother Richard? But if so, what did he steal? His wealth? His reputation? His wife? And if his brother, in some gargantuan and titanic duel, struck off his hand, and Richard sought vengeance, which of his hands was the instrument that brought an end to the intense and private vendetta? De Maupassant doesn't tell us. Wisely, he leaves that to us to decide for ourselves. I won't easily close my eyes tonight, for fear that my mind's eye will conjure up a vision of the black and desiccated hand with the yellowed nails, scrabbling like some loathsome crab across the floor, up and over my bed, and scuttling around the walls, its four good fingers moving like spider legs, the mutilated stump of the fifth like a head. Our cast included Alexander Scorby, Ian Martin, Mildred Clinton, and Guy Sorrell. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Now, from the makers of Coldwater Omo, on the bed in a dimly lit cell, Emma Peel struggled feebly. She'd made one unsuccessful attempt to escape by tackling the man Priest when he came to try to extract information from her. Unfortunately, he'd been helped by Dexter, who turned out to be quite an expert with a cosh. Mrs. Peel now had a large bump on the temple and a headache. She was further restricted by a gag and a straitjacket. She'd seldom been more helped. Mrs. Peel fell off the bed. She staggered to her feet, lost her balance, and fell heavily against one of the many sacks that were propped against the wall. The sack tore open, fell sideways, and started scattering the contents on the floor of the cell. Hundreds of envelopes, all typed out, ready for posting, all exactly the same as those used to cause the deaths of every ear, nose, and throat specialist. Emma Peel passed out.
The Avengers. John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers.
Episode 5 of this story, in which John Steed, although infected with enthusiasm, realizes that he is still out in the cold and wonders if his efforts are really not to be sneezed at. John Steed, visiting Colonel Morris Timothy, retired, had found him in the grip of a most vicious cold. Steed gathered that this was more or less the colonel's permanent, unhappy state, and that as a result of this, the retired army man had decided to devote the rest of his natural days to finding a cure. Steed, privately, thought it would be a long job, but he agreed to be shown over the colonel's cold cure clinic, which was attached to the house.
Well, this way. I'm sure you'd like to see our deep freeze room where we induce colds for curing.
Yes.
This way. Evening, nurse.
Evening, Dr. Glover. Evening, Colonel.
Hello. Evening.
Steed did not react, but he did note that the badge on the nurse's uniform read Anastasia Academy. The first nurse had also had that uniform.
That's two.
What's that?
I said,
at two. Bless you.
This way, Mr. Steed. It's austere, isn't it?
Yeah, everything must be ultra-sanitary and 100% hygienic.
Quite. Tell me, these guinea pigs, the students who volunteer, do they do this for fun? Science.
They get free board and expenses.
Oh, this is the room. It's kept just below freezing point. Prolonged exposure to such a temperature usually induces a cold within 48 hours. Would you care to look through the grill?
Certainly shiver my timbers.
Oh, I don't think it does any permanent harm.
What happens when they've caught the cold bug? Then we isolate the virus and inoculate the patients with experimental antidotes. Come and see our allergy room.
Oh, thank you.
I believe you're satisfaction, Doctor.
Oh, yes. Yes, thank you, nurse. I see that you employ Anastasia nurses.
Yeah, it's all part of the helpful organization. Glover here insists on it. You train them, we'll use them.
And they are only the best. Matron Alice sees to that.
What's she now?
In here next. Right. 75% of the population have at least one cold a year. 25% have four or more. The loss of working hours is staggering.
The mind boggles.
Quite.
So So this laboratory is where we experiment on antidotes for allergic diseases.
And we're after complete victory. Yes, no good chasing the enemy into the foothold where they can regroup. Search and destroy while they're still out on a raiding party. That's the ticket.
Hide them in the veins and in the arteries.
In the cells and in the membrane.
In the handkerchief.
And in the paper tissues. Biggest mistake they made was to invade me. I intend to fight back with every weapon at my disposal. Yes, every weapon.
Out in the night, speeding its way towards the heart of the city, was a Rolls Royce. Priest, in the back seat, reached for the speaking tube. With the other hand, he held an envelope.
Dexter, you may well know our destination. The same as before, Dr. Padley, Seaton, and Herrick. This time, it's for Dr. Herrick. Do hurry, Dexter. We don't want the doctor to be too late to collect a special delivery.
John Steed completed his tour of the clinic.
Well, thank you, Dr. Glover. Most interesting.
Well, I hope you'll decide to join us, Mr. Steed. The more the merrier.
Carry on the good work, Glover. Remember our aim, unconditional surrender. This way, Steed. Yeah, long campaign, Steed. Long campaign.
And, of course, you're running short of allies.
What, Ed?
Cameras, Padley, Seaton, all dead. Did you know them?
I wrote to them several times. Never had a reply. Like a drink? Scotch?
Oh, thank you.
As Colonel Timothy retired, turned to the drinks cabinet, Steed sneaked a quick look down at the open appointment book on the desk. What he saw gave him quite a start, for there, in the Colonel's precise hand, was written, Contact Herrick.
I suppose they thought themselves above this sort of thing. Perhaps they thought, as specialists, they were too good. Too brilliant to work on something as common as the common cold. Your drink.
Oh, thank you, Colonel. But I don't think I'll stay for it after all. Thank you again. See you later.
Oh, really, really, Steve, but you haven't...
And under cover of this last outburst, Steve left. He made for the nearest phone box on the London Road. In the London consulting rooms of Padley, Seaton, and Herrick, old Dr. Herrick was working late. His eyes stretched himself.
Sufficient to the day. No more calls. Sufficient to the day. Home.
Downstairs in the Park Rolls, Priest gave his instructions.
The delivery doesn't take place to the rooms, Dexter. That's Herrick's car, the large black one standing over there by the entrance to the park. Leave the envelope propped up against the inside of the windscreen. Then come back here and wait.
John Steed, having given up hope of reaching Herrick by phone, ran back to his Bentley, climbed in, and drove as fast as he could towards town. Waited patiently. It had its reward. Eventually, old Mr. Herrick left his room, doddered his way down the steps and over to his car.
There he goes. Won't be long now, Dexter.
Herrick's car was an automatic. He got in, started the engine, slipped the car into gear, and was about to drive off when he noticed the envelope propped up on the inside of the windscreen. Herrick frowned, took the envelope, ripped it open. The effect was immediate. He first sneezed. His foot slipped as he was thrown forward and hit the accelerator pedal. The car shot forward at great speed, rapidly climbed the grass verge. At the entrance to the park gate was a large tree. Herrick's car hit it a glancing blow. The door flew open, and with one last enormous sneeze, Herrick pitched out. As the Rolls purred by the crash, Steed arrived. He stopped outside Padley, Seaton, and Herrick, and then saw Herrick's crashed car. He hurried over. A glance told him that Herrick was dead. Another glance showed him the envelope clutched in the old man's hand. In the allergy room of the cold cure clinic, another envelope was being held, this time by a pair of rubber gloves worn by Matron Alice.
Just your mask. Now, the nozzle into the envelope and seal it. So. And now, this is a special delivery. Note the name, personal and private, John Steed, Esquire. Urgent. This must go at once, while I go and attend to that little pet nuisance of ours. I rather fancy she needs cooling off.
There was only one person John Steed could talk to, a person just as worried about the case as he was, Mother.
Things are going out of control, Steed. I told you when I assigned the case that it was urgent. Now, every day brings in more reports of specialists dying. Now, why do you think I sent for you in the first place?
I'm beginning to have my doubts, Mother.
Your job is to stop this mayhem in the medical profession.
I wish we could find Mrs. Peel.
How far have you got now?
4 envelopes.
Well, that's an improvement. Last time it was 10,000. What have they got to do with it?
I wish I knew. One was found near every dead man.
Well, it's no use running to Mother all the time. Find out anything at Timothy's place.
No, not really.
Well, I'm not surprised.
I am.
Why?
Too many arrows point in that direction.
Laws of coincidence broken too often.
That's right. Emma Peel was onto something before she disappeared.
How do you know?
Because she sent for Dr. Fawcett of the Institute of Allergic Diseases.
Had a chat with him?
A short one. May I use your phone?
Help yourself. Not that one. Unless you can speak fluent Swahili.
Well, as a matter of fact, I do. However... I think you're sickening.
What?
For a cold, Mother. For a cold.
Avengers. Listen every evening, Monday to Friday, to John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers. Brought to you by the makers of Coldwater Omo.
Have a good evening, and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwick from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian of Seraphic Panoply and Stevie Farnaby. Thank you.